Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown Belmont Stakes Preview Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Alicia Hughes. Please go ahead, Ms. Hughes.
Thank you, and welcome everyone to this week's NTRA teleconference to preview the 151st edition of the Belmont Stakes on June 8th at Belmont Park. The 1.5 miles Belmont Stakes is a centerpiece of the 3-day Belmont Stakes Racing Festival from June 6th to the 8th, which will include 18 stakes races, including 8 Grade 1 races on Belmont Stakes Day alone. This week's trio of guests all figure to be major players in next weekend's blockbuster lineup, and our first guest is heading to New York with a couple of very live prospects for next weekend's stakes. Eclipse Award-winning trainer Dale Romans is bringing Everfast to the final leg of the Triple Crown off a runner-up effort in the Preakness Stakes, and he also has Grade 1 winner promises fulfilled, set to start in one of the saltiest editions of the Met Mile that we've seen in recent years. Dale, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Pleasure, as always, to get a chance to pick your brain. Dale, first and foremost, you know, with Everfast, he came into the Preakness Stakes as, you know, pretty deep under most people's radar after finishing off the board in his prior 3 starts, but he almost completed the Hail Mary pass that day with the way that he closed and he finished. What was it that you saw from him leading up to the Preakness that gave you the confidence to go ahead and take a shot with him in that spot?
Well, it goes all the way back to the Holy Bull, and he shows then that he can compete with good horses. And like I've said many times now, that once they show it that they can, then don't give up on them if they throw a couple of clunkers. And he's just been a steady horse all along. I felt like the race on Derby Day 7/8 wasn't bad, and I thought that would be a good prep to try to stretch him back out. And the, you know, the top of the crop weren't going to run, so there's really no downside to it. We take a shot with a 3-year-old that's doing well that in a big race, and to show you he's training well, and why not take a chance?
Yeah, absolutely. And although he's been very effective closing, you know, I went back and I watched the Holy Bull race where he ran 2nd, and he was able to kind of rate right up there in that first flight that day. Given that the Belmont Stakes is a race that actually favors horses with more tactical speed, would you expect him to maybe be a little bit closer to the running next Saturday than he has been?
I would think going 1.5 miles, you know, any horse can be where they want. They're going to be going so slow early, and I'll leave that up to the jock. I just felt like in the Preakness, even though he's coming off of a sprint, that he'd have a strong finishing kick, and it looked like a lot of speed in the race. And Joel and I just decided the best chance we had was to let him get in a good gallop mode and finish fast. And it worked out, almost worked out all the way. But, you know, I'll let the jock figure it out when they leave there in the Belmont. A lot of people don't realize that speed is strong in the Belmont. You know, by the time they get to the 8th pole, they're all tired. It's hard for a horse to catch. So I would think he'll be laying a little bit closer.
And like I said, I'd be remiss not to ask you about Promises Fulfilled, who's going in, you know, a race right now that could be your contender for race of the year with the Met Mile. I know that this is a horse who you've always been high on. He always shows up. He's been right near the top of what one could argue is one of the toughest divisions in racing. How did you kind of assess his run last time out at Churchill Downs, especially coming out of the hard race that he had in Dubai?
I thought he ran well. It was a very tough race, and he gets beat, you know, ahead for 2nd. And Dubai was a good race off the layoff for him. He got left in the gate. That's the first time he'd ever been behind horses. He still finished strong, finished 4th. I think if he'd have broke, he'd have been right there. I don't really know why he broke so poorly that day, but, you know, he did. And I felt like the Met Mile was our big goal for the summer, and we had a better chance to wheel back quicker than normally would out of Dubai. And the race was big on Derby Day. So now he's had 5 more weeks. He's had 2 spectacular works, 1 today and 1 last Friday. Couldn't be doing better going into the race. But this is a tough division, a bunch of good horses. I mean, it's been exciting to be a part of it and to watch it.
Sounds good, Dale. It looks like we've got a handful of media on today. So with that, I will throw it back to our operator and see if the media has any questions for you today.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Tim Wilkin with the Albany Times Union.
The do you think that the Derby buzz has died down yet from the controversial finish from that first Saturday in May? Or do you think people are still talking about it?
It's died down some, but I mean it's gonna be talked about for years. It's never gonna be completely died down. But it has been 4 weeks or what, 4 weeks now, but you know, they'll be talking about it till the end of time.
Do you think it's unfair to Bill Mott?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I'm sure Bill would have rather won a Derby a different way, but the rules are the rules, and he got his Derby. A much-deserved Derby.
How much attention do you think it brought into the game? Maybe not the attention the sport wanted.
Well, you know, it's not a major, to me it wasn't a major negative. It wasn't like the eight bells issue. It was an issue of what happens in the rules of racing, and even though it was controversial, it wasn't negative. And it, you know, when we were on every talk show, it was all over regular media. I don't see how it could have hurt us.
One last one, Dale. You said before, when you were going to Preakness, you said, why not take a chance? Do you think you're taking as big a chance now, or do you think this horse is coming into it as best he could be? And he couldn't be a factor.
He's coming into it as good as he could be. I didn't see it as big a chance as a lot of the media did, but I feel like, you know, we're taking a horse that's a live middle-priced horse. In the Preakness, I think we took a live long shot. And I think the betting public deserves a little respect for making 28-1. I mean, it's very rare you see a horse morning line 50-1 go down.
What do you think he'll be on Saturday, next Saturday?
Oh, I think he'll be in the teens, but not overwhelming.
Great. Thanks, Dale.
We'll take our next question from Danny Brewer with HorseRacingScoop.com.
Dale, my man, how are you?
I'm good, Hillbilly. How'd you end up second? I let you be the first question.
Well, I tried. I don't know. I guess maybe I was counting my bottles of whiskey I got here. I'm bringing to Louisville with me is what it was. So I guess maybe that's why I was the second this time. But
you don't take Santa's beat. You keep that Tennessee whiskey down there.
All right, we're going to do some talking about that now. The move that Everfast displayed in the Preakness, and you know, we know he's got it. Is that something? What do you do to cultivate that, or is it just letting that horse be that horse? You know, and getting him comfortable.
You don't try to change much in 3 weeks. You just try to let it be himself and do his thing, getting a rhythm, mile and a half about getting a rhythm and keeping it going.
Rosario going to be on him again?
No, it's going to be Saez. Joel has it.
Saez.
Yes.
Yeah.
He promised to ride in a straight line.
Go ride it as straight as you can anyway, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. He's a good kid.
When we talk about promises fulfilled, and you mentioned the break in the Golden Shaheed, have you done anything? Because, like I said, that was very uncharacteristic for him. Because usually he's out of the gate like a rocket. So, have you done anything to school him in the gate or anything like that, or it just you just chalk that up as a fluke?
Yeah, you know, you don't teach him anything new at this stage. He'll come out of there fast. I think that was just a fluke. They don't have a bell on the gate over there. Maybe that made a difference. You know, you just don't know with horses.
You've compared him to a nuclear bomb before because he's got speed and stamina. Are you still seeing, you know, I know he's a little bit older, he's a year older now, you still think that he's got those bomb-like capabilities?
Today's the best work I've ever seen out of him. So I'm expecting
I think that's a pretty strong statement right there, wouldn't you agree?
It is. Well, you know, he was a May foal. Last year he was always young in the crop and just catching up. I feel like finally now he's catching up with everybody and becoming more mature.
Dale, as you know, I appreciate your time, buddy. I wish you the best of luck. I'll be talking to you, all right?
Thanks, Dan.
And again, press star one to ask a question. And we'll take our next question from Jonathan Lintner with Horse Racing Nation.
Hi, Dale. Thanks for taking a few minutes to do this. You had mentioned a few times last year when you were trying to decide between the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile and the Sprint that you thought ultimately Promises Fulfilled would be a better horse at a mile. What sort of gives you that inclination, and do you still believe that as strongly now as you did back then?
I really do, because he does have the speed that it takes to be a sprinter, but he also has stamina. And a mile race, to say, is the toughest race on a horse. They run gate to wire, and that's what separates them. And that's why they say that milers become such good stallions. He's this type of horse to me that can start fast and keep right on going.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Tom Gicha with Horse Race Insider.
Well, 19 going to Derby, only 4 come back in the Preakness, and none of the most highly regarded horses in Louisville are coming back Saturday. Is this where the game is headed?
I mean, I think you're picking one year. I think you can probably go back in history and you'll find other years of similar things have happened. We are coming off 2 Triple Crown winners. Those horses, you know, hit every race. So
yeah.
I just think it's an anomaly for this year.
Well, yeah, the Triple Crown winners come back, but, I don't want you to ever train another guy's horse. But, like, Todd Pledgett does not run in the Preakness unless he's got the Derby winner. Baffett isn't sending a horse to the Belmont this year. Has it become a case if you don't win the Derby, you just kind of cross out the other races?
I don't think so at all. I think he has a Preakness winner coming back. I mean, I think it's just year to year, horse to horse, trainer to trainer. I mean, you can go back to Secretary. I mean, that was a pretty weak Belmont that he ran against. People just kept trying to chase him. You can't say the game's going a certain direction off of 1 or 2 years. I think the game's, the Triple Crown is still strong.
Well, I asked in terms of, you know, it seems now that trainers like to have 4 or 5 weeks between races rather than, you know, the short amount of time.
They do like to, and that's true, but there's only a 3-year-old once, and the history is Derby horse runs good in the Belmont. I mean, in the Preakness coming off of 2 weeks, and there's only 3 3-year-old classics, so I think people will continue and always show up. It's just going to be a year-to-year thing.
Okay, thanks a lot for your thoughts.
And again, press star 1 to ask a question. And there are no further questions.
Thank you. Dale, before we let you go and hop off here, I just wanted to ask you real quick. I think I read an interview with you the other day where you talked about just kind of your barn in general, you know, maybe going through a little bit of a rebuilding stage right now, so to speak. When you have a horse like Everfast jump up and run as big as he did in the Preakness, how much of that is just an overall morale boost for the whole barn in general?
Oh, it's a big boost. I mean, yeah, we've had a slow year this year, but I got some good 2-year-olds coming in. Got some horses ran them back into form, some three-year-old mains. We're going to be just fine. Like I said, like you've heard me say a million times, Wayne Lucas told me when I was a kid, judge yourself in five-year increments or you'll end up going crazy. Best advice I ever got.
Sounds good. Like I said, Dale, as always, I said, I know you, I said, you are busy. So once again, always a pleasure. I thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us today. And I guess I will see you in a handful of days in New York then.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, everybody. Well,
thanks again. And next up, we are going to check in with trainer Tom Amos, who conditions the current queen of the sophomore filly ranks with Kentucky Oaks winner Serengeti Empress. Serengeti Empress is slated to make her first start since that Oaks triumph in the Grade 1 Acorn Stakes on the Belmont Stakes on the undercard, where she will aim for her second top-level triumph and fourth career graded stakes win. Tom, thank you so much for joining us on the call this afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again. You know, going back, obviously, when Serengeti Empress, when she captured the Oaks, that was about as emotional as I've ever seen you after a win, and rightfully so. To get her back to being right that day after what happened at Fairgrounds, where does that rank for you kind of firstly just in terms of your kind of training achievements?
Oh, well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fact that it was the Kentucky Oaks. You know, that's, I mean, it's such rare air for a horse to win a race like that. And for Serengeti Empress, a horse that, you know, we bought at the sale and have been a part of her development since the hammer drop back in September of a yearling year. And you know, watching the ups and downs of her two-year-old and then three-year-old year and then culminating with that win, it was just such a rush of emotions. But, you know, I think the overriding emotion was pure joy, and that's certainly what I was feeling when they crossed the finish line.
And, you know, she's a horse where, you know, the talent with her has always been readily apparent, and her game plan is no secret. You know, she's just so dangerous when she gets loose on that front end. Have you worked with her in her training to see if she can be effective rating off the pace, or is it more with her of this is her, you know, this is her best asset, and she's either going to fire or lose trying?
Yeah, I think that's a worthwhile question. So, first of all, let's put it all in perspective. The Acorn is a one-turn mile, and when you start backing up in distance, particularly when you go from two turns to one turn, you're inviting speed into the race. And certainly that Serengeti Empress's strong suit is that she has speed and she can carry it around the ground. But now, shortening up and going into a one-turn race as we're doing with the Acorn, you're going to be asking a lot of Serengeti Empress if you want her to go to the front and maintain against what is probably more pure speed than we saw in the Kentucky Oaks. So, having said that, you know, I don't think you can go into a race like that and say, hey, we're going to be on the lead. And certainly we did make that statement leading the Kentucky Oaks. We made no secret about our plans and where we were going to be. It worked out great. It's different now, and we recognize that. So, Serengeti Empress will still be prominent, of course. And if she's on the lead, then she's on the lead. But we're not married to it as we were going into the Kentucky Oaks. We're just going to have to see how the race unfolds. We've got a great rider in Irad Ortiz, and it's going to be his race to judge.
Sounds good, Tom. Like I said, I said we will go ahead and throw it back to the operator and check in with the media now and see if they have any questions for you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Danny Brewer with HorseRacingScoop.com.
Tom, how are we doing today?
I'm good, Danny. It's good to hear your voice.
Hey, with the Empress, you know, consistency is what any great athlete is looking for. What have you done or not done as far as trying to promote consistency with her, as far as, you know, is it the same training routine, it's the same eating routine? What do you do to try to make her as consistent as you can make her?
Well, look, anytime you're dealing with a developing horse, and by consistency, I assume you're talking about going back in time to her two-year-old year leading up into her most recent race at three. And she's only had three races this year at three. So having said that, consistency is about knowing your horse and about learning the likes and dislikes. And oftentimes, because you can't simulate a race in the morning, you're learning as you go. With Serengeti Empress, she's had some excuses in the race she didn't run well in. You know, going all the way back to Saratoga on her stakes debut, the rider dropped a stick at the head of the lane. Looking at last year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, she really got in tight and was squeezed out of the spot by the winner, Jayhawk, which was good aggressive riding on their part. So there are things that have gone into each of these races that you would certainly label legitimate excuse, and of course the most recent inconsistency would be the Fairgrounds Oaks and the fact that she bled. So as these things come up, you want to try to see in training if you can correct them. So I guess you take them one step at a time. You know, it's almost like a football team that plays four preseason games before the regular season starts. You learn about your team, you learn about your athletes, and we learned about her. So the most recent setback was, of course, the fact that she bled. And significantly at that, at the Fairgrounds Oaks, we did a lot management-wise to try to make sure that that wouldn't happen in the Kentucky Oaks. But in the end, it goes back to something I said earlier, which is that it is impossible to simulate a race in the morning. So although you can be confident that you have developed a good game plan, it's when it's, you know, out on the field and how it goes. For us, it went well. We think we've learned how to manage that, and we'll use that same game plan going into the Acorn on June the 8th.
How many pinch yourself moments have you had over the last two or three weeks, you know, where you're like wondering, hey, man, did this happen? Is this real? Because, I mean, has just been fantastic for you, I'm sure. So how many of those moments have you had?
Well, for me personally, it's come in stages. You know, the immediate aftermath of the race, I was with, you know, my family, and some close friends, and we all got to share it together, not only after the race, but that evening, and we had a great time with it. And I remember waking up the next morning and, the very first words that came out of my mouth were, it's real. You know, it really happened. So there's that. And, you know, then there's been a stage where I think it's, at least for me personally, it's been the culmination of a career that's been, well, at least by my standards, a wonderful career. I've gotten to work with animals my whole life. I've gotten to work with horses, and I did it since the time I was in high school. I was able to make a job of it, and I was able to raise two children, put them through school, and make a nice living at it. And, you know, I know from my friends, not necessarily the ones that were with me, but just in general speaking, you know, I've got to do something that's rather rare, and that is to do something I love and make a living at it. And so I love working with horses. I love working with animals, and I feel really blessed in that regard. So for me, that win, the Kentucky Oaks, and the perspective I looked at it from was, you know, here I am on the turf course in this winner's circle here at Churchill Downs. They only use twice a year for the Kentucky Derby and for the Kentucky Oaks, and that's it. And I'm standing right here with a great athlete who's brought me here in Serengeti Empress and has brought all this to not only myself, but the stable, my family, you know, and I thought a lot about all the people that helped me get here, from my teachers when I was working my rep to become a trainer, to, you know, all the owners that put their confidence in me along the way. And I know that may sound cliche-ish, but that's really what went through my mind. Of course, my mom and dad, who don't really know anything about racing, but with six boys, they always supported our dreams. That was my dream since I was in middle school, and they never did anything but always pushed me towards it. So I guess, having said all that, the next stage was finally one of real satisfaction that I've won what I consider a signature race here in the United States, and I think there are only a few. And I really have gone from excitement and, like I said, pure joy to just tremendous satisfaction, not only for myself, but for my stable. And if you come in my barn, you'll see the same faces time and time again. We've been together a long time, and I take a lot of satisfaction in that.
Tom, keep them rolling. Wish you the best of luck. Hopefully this is just the beginning, all right?
Thank you, my friend.
Again, press star one to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Tom Gicho with Horse Race Insider.
Kind of like a multitasker. You've got quite a side career as a commentator on racing telecasts and things on TVG and other places. Could you see that this would maybe hasten the end of your training career, as other people have done? And as someone who does comment on racing publicly, what do you think of the situation in California?
Well, I can answer the first question easily. I'm going to train as long as I'm able. I love being out there in the mornings. I love working with the horses, and at least as far as I'm concerned, I think that's what defines me away from the house and as a working individual. The TV stuff is, I really enjoy it. I think it's an opportunity for me to give my viewpoints and my ideas towards racing and give people a chance to see what I'm about rather than just a name in the form. But no, that's not what I'm looking to do long term. That's not what I'm looking to do to take the place of what I love doing, which is trading thoroughbred racehorses. So having said that I love trading thoroughbred racehorses, the California situation is probably a bit mislabeled because, to me, it's the situation with racing in America, not just California. And so anyone that isolates it as a California situation, and I know you didn't mean to do it like that, but you give me an opportunity to say this, is not paying attention. This is a situation for thoroughbred racing to recognize. I said it immediately after the Kentucky Oaks in the press conference. We're at a real crossroads here in the United States. And that crossroads is the public perception of what thoroughbred racing is. And if we don't get our message clearly out that shows that it's about a love for the animal and that we want to do everything we can to protect those equine athletes on the racetrack, if that message isn't loud and clear from a unified voice in thoroughbred industry, I think we're in big trouble. And unified is a word that isn't used much in thoroughbred racing because we don't have it. And it's fractured, I realize that. And it's fractured as much as anything due to medication reform and the things that go with it. I've said for a long, long time, I don't care what they do with medication. They can get rid of it all. But the one thing that I know to be important is Lasix. I say that from someone that's been in the industry since I was a kid and has worked on the backside that entire time, as someone that was an assistant trainer in New York when Lasix was not legal, and I watched what we did to try to simulate a shot of Lasix with the thoroughbreds, and it wasn't always in the horse's best interest what we did back then. But, and this is a big but, even though I'm firmly in the corner of Lasix, I am smart enough to recognize that it's not just what I think or what perhaps the majority of the trainers think on the backside. It is about what the public thinks, because the issue is not so much Lasix versus no Lasix, although the insiders know that that's the case. The issue has become possibly horse racing versus no horse racing. And that's when you have to take a step back and you have to say, enough. And if compromises need to be made to have the public to be a believer in our sport, be a believer in the people that participate in our sport, like myself, then I'm willing to make that compromise, even though I may not agree with it personally. And I'm telling you, I don't agree with it on my experience on the backside for all these years. I'm 57 years old. My first job was at age 15 on the backside, and I always paid attention. I was always trying to learn. I've done it all, from a vet assistant to an assistant trainer to a hot walker to a groom. But once again, I do realize that public perception is everything in our sport, as it is in other things. And it doesn't take an HBO 15-minute segment for me to recognize that we have a real issue in horse racing, and the sides need to come together. And by the sides, I'm talking about Lasix versus no Lasix, because really that's what it's boiling down to these days.
Well, thank you. That was very thorough and thoughtful. I just like to add, but what do you say to people who, on Kentucky Derby Day, when the best horses in the country are theoretically there, 99% of the fields are running on Lasix. Is it that essential?
I'll answer that in a roundabout way. Initially in California, when everything went down, it was said that there was going to be no Lasix use, no medication whatsoever in California, back in the beginning of April. And I said to myself, this is going to be a great experiment, because for those of us that think the vast majority of thoroughbreds bleed, we're going to find out, because now we've got a real life situation in one part of the country where no Lasix will be allowed, and we're going to see, finally, one way or another, is Lasix important to racing as far as horses bleeding or not bleeding? That never came to pass, because things settled down a little bit and things changed a little bit. But in the end, maybe that's not what's important here, the Lasix versus no Lasix. You know, in the end, I think it's important that the public doesn't think we're quote-unquote drugging our horses, no matter how therapeutic it may be. And if we can't get convince the public that what we're doing is therapeutically good for the horse, I'm of the mindset now that maybe it needs to go.
Again, thank you. That was very thoughtful. Thank you.
Again, press star one to ask a question. And there are no questions at this time.
Thank you. Tom, you are, eloquent as always in your thoughts. Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Lone Sailor, who got a little bit lost in the shuffle with everything last week. You know, he's kind of very very quietly had some very, you know, good runs lately. You know, he was second in the Oakland Handicap, third, you know, this past week in the Gold Cup at Santa Anita. Do you feel like he's steadily working his way towards, you know, towards running back into his best form?
So, I answered a question about Serengeti Empress earlier and learning the likes and dislikes. Lone Sailor, who's run a lot more and is a year older, and I've also had since the hammer dropped when he was bought as a yearling when I picked him out, he's still a work in process, in progress. And when you look at his most recent race in California, he was put in a position behind horses and was far enough back that, you know, by the time they got to the 3/8 pole with 3/8 of a mile to run, it was evident that he was not going to catch the leaders. He made a good late run and was third, but we've got to find a way to, he doesn't have to entertain the pace early in a race. That's never going to happen with him, but he's got to get in better position quicker in the race against these quality horses. And that's what we're going to be working on with him when he runs back. And for those that wonder, if he ever gets in one of those big races and the track happens to be sloppy, when I was growing up, the racing form used to have this asterisk they put next to the horse's name for a superior slop horse. They don't do that anymore, but if they did, he'd have one next to his name.
Awesome, Tom. Sounds good. Again, I will let you go and get back to your day, but thank you again, as always, for taking the time out to come on and join us and share your thoughts with everything today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Tom. We'll see you in New York in a few days. And last but certainly not least, we are going to go to the man whose phone has not stopped buzzing over the last 4 weeks, Preakness Stakes winning trainer Mark Cathy, who brings War of Will into the Belmont Stakes, as well as Peter Pan, runner-up Sir Winston. War of Will's victory in the Preakness marked the first win in a Triple Crown race for Cathy, who was a Hall of Fame finalist this year. And barring any setback, War of Will is also slated to become the only horse this year to compete in all three legs of the Triple Crown. Mark, thank you again for joining us on our call this year.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
I think this is your third call already you've done for us. It's got to be some kind of record at this point.
Oh, I don't know. But it's usually good if I get to talk to you, usually. So we want to keep it that way.
Well, yeah, we'll go ahead and keep it that way. And, I mean, while we're talking about some records, you know, since 2015, you've won 5 Breeders' Cup races. You've trained 4 individual champions during that time. What was the range of emotions like for you the other week to finally get that first classic win, especially doing it with a horse that I know you guys have believed from the start had that kind of, you know, level to him?
Well, it was, what can I say? It was the best feeling and biggest accomplishment that I think that I've achieved as a horse trainer. So it was very, very special.
And I know you've talked at length just about kind of the raw ability and talent that War of Will has and how he ranks as just maybe one of the more naturally talented horses that you've trained. How crucial was that in getting him back from that setback that he had in the Louisiana Derby to what he endured in the Kentucky Derby and to now still have something left in the tank after his Preakness win?
I think that's a great question. As I said to somebody the other day, they said, "Oh, you did a wonderful job of getting back and doing so well." And I said, "Well, let's give War of Will 99.9% of the credit, because the only way we would be able to achieve what we did with War of Will is to have a horse like War of Will, and they're very far few between."
And I know, you know, he's expected to vie for favoritism in the Belmont Stakes, but, you know, he's not alone in there. You've got Sir Winston that you're also set to go in there as well. When did the Belmont come on the radar specifically for him, and what are some of the factors that you think kind of allowed him to put in that good run in the Peter Pan Stakes after some disappointing efforts in the Tampa Bay Derby and the Bluegrass Stakes?
Well, I wasn't that disappointed in the Tampa Bay Derby. I knew it was going to be a little short for him, and he really came running the last part. So I wasn't disappointed in that. I was extremely disappointed in the Bluegrass, but honestly, I knew going in as the day before and the day of, the way the track was playing, I felt like we had no chance just because it was so speed favoring. I had tried to change that with Chocolate Kisses. She comes from way back, and I tried to keep her closer, and it didn't work. And I just told Julian in the Bluegrass, we're not going to do that. We're just going to let him run his race, and it is what it is, and it just didn't work. When we decided to go to the Peter Pan, I liked the distance. It was the 1.8 miles. I thought since it was one turn, he would get a lot of pace. And I thought he would come running, and Mr. Farmer and I talked about it, and we said, if he gives us, you know, a good effort, we're going to try the Belmont. And I mean, his effort was big. He ran 100 byer, went the last quarter of a mile, been 23-2, and you know, he ran really well. The problem and the question will be, everybody, you know, sees a horse running on in, going 1.8 miles, and said he'll love 1.5 miles. A 1.5 miles is just an entirely different run type race. A lot of times, the pace isn't fast. And he's going to still need a pace. He'll probably lay a little closer than he did in the Peter Pan. But he needs things to work out to make him effective.
Right. Sounds good, Mark. Like I said, and with that, I will throw it back to our operator and see if the media has any questions for you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And we'll take our first question from Danny Brewer with HorseRacingScoop.com.
Mark, how are you?
Good, Danny.
You know, you've mentioned something in the past about, you know, doing things based on the horse, finding the right path to get your horses where you want them to be at. Has that been something that absolutely has been true with War of Will?
Sure. You know, I think I do try to treat each horse differently. And, of course, War of Will's thrown a few little curveballs at us. But, yeah, for sure. But, again, his great mind and his great ability is what's allowed us to do what we've done.
As far as the 1.5 miles at the Belmont, is that something you think might be made to order for a horse that is as strong and athletic as he is?
I think, again, the Belmont is a funny run race, and it usually helps speed. He's got plenty of speed. The question and what'll decide whether he can go to 1.5 miles is how willing he is to rate early. He did rate very well in the Preakness, and but it was an extremely fast pace. So I think a lot of it's just going to depend on how much Tyler can get him to relax.
Do you have any idea yet how good he is? I mean, does any of us know how good he really is?
I don't think so. He's always had some obstacle to overcome, and he's been able to do it. If he ever were to get into some kind of rhythm, and he did have a rhythm, I shouldn't say that. He did have some rhythm down in Louisiana, and he did really well. Of course, they threw some crazy post positions at him. But I think he's got improvement. I think he's even a better horse than you saw in the Preakness.
Very good. Keep him rolling. Wish you the best of luck. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dan.
We'll take our next question from Frank Inks with Bloodhorse.
Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, congratulations on the Preakness.
Oh, thank you so much.
What went into the decision to not work between the Preakness and the Belmont? What went into that decision to prepare for the Belmont?
Well, you know, I didn't breeze in between the Derby and the Preakness, as some do. I know we have an extra week, but I just kind of looked at the positives and the negatives, and here's a horse that, if he's not fit now, will never be fit.
Of course.
I thought he lost. I thought he was kind of lean and mean for the Derby. Then, you know, looking at him there at the Preakness, he had lost a few pounds even there.
Gotcha.
So that was a concern. And the other thing is, why, you know, going 1.5 miles, do I really want to get him pumped up and on the bridle? And that's all the work would do. So he's happy. He's galloping. He's a happy horse right now. So we're just going to go with it that way. If he gets beat in the Belmont, it's not going to be because of lack of fitness. I promise you that.
Yeah. How important has it been to have David Carroll and that setup that you have at Keeneland? How important has it been for this horse?
Well, extremely important. For one, you know, to be able to have David, who knows him better than me, probably. You know, David's had him for a long time. Keeneland is a nice atmosphere, and you know, he gets to get out and graze. He's trained there. It's just he's around everybody that he knows. Those are people don't realize it, but that's the same family that he's been with. And when I mean that, the same hot walkers, the same grooms, everybody, the same sounds that he's heard for a long time.
Yeah.
And so I've thought about sending him to New York, and then I said, well, why don't we send him home where he can relax? I don't know you about everybody else, but when I'm home, I relax better.
Yeah, there you go. And then one question on Sir Winston. Have you trained horses for Tracy for a long time? Kind of how did that relationship come together, and what's he like to work with?
Oh, Sir Winston is one of the first horses that I've trained for anybody.
Thinking, yeah.
Yeah, Tracy, the farmers are very good friends with the Oxleys. And so over the years, I think Mr. Oxley is kind of hinted to Tracy, you know, maybe give Mark a horse to train or two. And
gotcha.
But nothing ever happened. And one day we were talking, and he said, if you saw anything you liked, I'd probably buy it. So we bought a few horses, and then he said, I have a few homebreds that I'd like to send you. And I said, okay, well, I'd love to have them. And that's where Sir Winston came from. That's our
gotcha.
This is our first year. So 3-year-olds are the first horses that I've ever trained for Tracy.
He's been a good guy to work with.
Oh, he's wonderful. He's a great guy. Both the Oxleys and the farmers are wonderful. The nice part is that they've been around and seen it all and
yeah.
done it all. So you can't really surprise them. So many people that get into their horse racing early on, they've been successful in many different parts of their life, and they're
right.
not used to losing. Well,
right.
in this game, you need to get used to losing, because it's going to happen more than you're going to win.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Mark. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We'll take our next question from Tim Wilkins with the Albany Times Union.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
Good. Great. Great. Thanks. How are you? With everything that's gone on in this Triple Crown, how do you think the sport is being perceived by the average sports fan? You know, they see the DQ, they see the Preakness when the horse gets loose.
I don't know how the average fan's doing. I can only tell you, people that my wife and I know, and people were around that aren't race fans but watch it, you know, once a year or something, they seem to be more intrigued by it. The nice part was, you know, with Johnny coming off in the Preakness, you know, luckily he didn't get hurt, the horse didn't get hurt. Most of the people seem to be entertained by it. The crazy thing is, and this is how misunderstood our game is, you know, some people ask the question, now, if the horse had been first, would he have won? You know, so luckily he didn't finish first, or that would have been just, they're still having a tough time understanding. My biggest question is, asked me, is War Will got bothered worse than anybody in the Derby. Why didn't he win? And so then I have to explain the process.
I mean, you've been in the middle of the whole thing, both races.
Yeah.
You win the Preakness, and then you have the incident with the Derby. Is it been kind of crazy for you in that respect? You go from one gamut to the other?
Well, I do a lot. You know, I've done a lot of, you know, I've done a lot of interviews in the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. And a lot of, I would say some of them, or a lot of them are because of the controversy that surrounded the Kentucky Derby. Not so much, you know, what happened in the Preakness. I'm just hoping we can have a nice, quiet Belmont. And I figure I'm going to go on record telling everybody I want to draw the one hole. And it's going to be something like 2,600 to one if we can do it three times in a row.
Well, I don't think I would take that bet. Speaking of the Belmont, Mark, I mean, if obviously you're very confident in your horse, but if there's a horse that you had to worry about, would it be Bill's horse, Tacitus?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Why is that? What do you like about him?
Well, Bill's a great trainer, and, we're going to his house to play now. He's got a home field advantage. The horse shows up every time, runs hard, and I'm sure Bill will have him ready. But I still think I wouldn't, I think our horse is the horse to beat. If you look at even in the Kentucky Derby, we didn't get beat very far by Tacitus.
Mm-hmm.
And we had loads of trouble. So I still think, I felt like even in the Preakness, they made Improbable the favorite, which I understood, with Bob and everything. But if you looked at the Derby and compared, there was no comparison. He had a relatively good trip, and we had a trip from down under, and he beat us a length or two, and the same kind of goes for Bill's horse.
If you look back before the Louisiana Derby, a lot of people were saying the Derby winner is in Mark Cassie's Mart.
Yes, and things happened, I'm still extremely proud, even though we have nothing to show for it. Warmwill showed up in the Kentucky Derby, and he was ready to put his best foot forward. And unfortunately, things happened that didn't allow that. But I'm still very proud of his effort.
All right, great, Mark. See you in New York.
Okay.
We'll take our next question from Dan Ralph with Canadian Press.
Thank you. Mark, I'm wondering if you've allowed yourself to think of what might have been in the Derby and what you could be lining up for going into the Belmont compared to what you are now?
Good question, Dan, and it's something I've been asked many times. But honestly, positively, no, I haven't worried about that. I am so happy just to be where I'm at, that our horse is in one piece, he's healthy, that nothing happened to him in the Derby. I don't look back at all. And I wouldn't begin to say that, look, if nothing happened, were we going to win for sure? No, I'm not going to say that. The only thing that I would say to that is it was going to be one heck of a horse race. And that's the only thing that I can say, about that. So, no, I'm not going to look back. I know many people are, and I have people come to me every day that want to say, oh, you could be going for the Triple Crown, but it's not going to happen. So I'm trying to look forward, not back.
Does that change if you win the Belmont?
Nah. If you know me very well, that's not. Nah.
I know.
If you know me well at all, that's not the way I think or do things. I'm not going to worry about what could have been. So if we win the Belmont, what the first thing I'm going to be thinking? Is how do we win the Travers?
Yep.
When you see me back at the barn after the race, we won the Belmont, and you say, what's going through Mark Cassie's mind? It's going to be
Travers.
Now how do we win the Travers? Yep.
Now let me shift gears up here. What are your thoughts upcoming about the plate? How your horses look?
I think we have a good shot. We have Federal Law. He's going to come back and run in the plate trial, and then we have Skywire, who got beat the other day as the favorite, but I wasn't disappointed at all. I think he'll really enjoy the mile and a quarter, and I think we got a good shot to win the Oaks. So maybe one of those fillies will run well enough that they deserve a shot at the Queen's Plate as well.
And then we'll talk about which one, right?
Well, I think, they're owned by different people, so we're just going to say hopefully one of them wins.
All right, we'll see you up here. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from John Precy with FourthRaceInsider.com.
Hey, Mark. Before we get started, good on you for the Preakness. Good job. Doing fine,
you,
sir, and hope to see you in New York. My colleague Tom Jicka asked Tom Amos a question relative to the California situation, and his answer was really very comprehensive and far-reaching. So I'm going to ask you to put on your philosophical hat for a minute, and I'm going to recall some of Tom's response to Tom's question. And I'm just looking at the notes now, and Ms. Amos said,
I am, before we start, John.
Say again?
I said, Tom's a lot smarter than I am, so I just want you to take that inspiration when you get my answer.
He's got all that TV practice. Don't kid yourself. I ain't buying it, all right? Anyhow, Tom was saying that, he firmly believes that racing is at a crossroads in the United States. He talked about the game being fractured. He said internally it's probably due to all the talk about medication reform. And this was, as a result of, what happened or what's happening out of California. Now, he said, as far as that is concerned, he doesn't care necessarily, what the rules are. But before we go any further, I've always been firmly in the corner of Lasix. But it's not about what I think. He said, it's about what the public thinks. Now, in California, the no medication or the limited medication ban or whatever they're doing out there, that's going to be the great experiment. It's going to be the Lasix people versus the non-Lasix people, so to speak. We're going to find out whether Lasix is important to racing vis-a-vis bleeding and not bleeding. But having said that, he said, while he's always been firmly in the corner of Lasix, I'm now of the mindset that maybe it has to go. And he was talking about public reception. So I understand I've just thrown a lot of things at you. But, what is your heart and your mind telling you about where we're at in this game right now?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm extremely concerned. I think there's been some mistakes made in California, and I know they're trying to correct them. It has nothing to do with Lasix, nothing whatsoever. What I would like everybody to go and look at is, I'd love for everyone to look at Woodbine. Woodbine has some of the most lenient drugs rules. They have most lenient procedure rules, but they have the least amount of breakdowns. It is by far, and I train all the difference between most trainers, they train in a certain area. I actually train in a lot of different areas, and I have the ability to know what goes on the synthetic track and the dirt track. And I think if you look at those statistics and you say, well, look, these procedures are allowed up at Woodbine, but meanwhile, they have the least amount of breakdowns. Well, are we not barking up the wrong tree? And as far as the perception, I think it's so many times things are how they're presented. If you go and you said to somebody, well, do you believe in not giving race day medication? That's kind of, they don't really understand it. If you say, well, don't give them Lasix. Again, they don't understand it. All that being said, I'm in the same boat as Tom. If that needs to be the way it's going to be done, and it needs to be done, we need to do it to save racing or help racing, then I'm all for it. The problem is, and the people that are trying to decide these things know little bit, have never trained a racehorse or never been around them. I know before we had Lasix, there are people out there that are going to do things. They're going to hold their water, their feed for 24 hours, 48 hours. They're going to do a lot of things that are much worse for a horse than Lasix. So if you believe that going and taking Lasix is going to be better for racing, it may be better for perception, but it's not going to be better for the horse or racing, in my opinion. And I base my opinion on, you know, I run a lot of horses. So I would ask, you know, all these experts and everything, why don't we dig a little deeper? I think that Lasix has as much to do with, you know, the problems. I don't even know where to compare it, but they're barking up the wrong tree. They're chasing the wrong rabbit, in my opinion. I would rather them look at the track surface and try to improve that.
Well, that's very helpful to know, you know, where you think the priorities lie. But, you know, that Tom was answering the question, you know, vis-a-vis, I think he also said it's going to come down to racing as opposed to no racing. So just to reiterate what you said just before, that, you know, whatever rules may or may not change, you can live with if ultimately it's good for the game.
Absolutely. You know, if that's what's good for the game, and after, you know, studies and investigations and not based on opinions by people that really have no idea what they're talking about, if that's what's best, I said it recently because I have been much outspoken about banning Lasix. But in the last 6 months, I've come out and I've said, look, that's what needs to be done, and you really think it's going to help, then let's do it. We can live without the Lasix, but it will be purely perception.
Well, having said that, thank you, you know, for a thoughtful answer to the question, and all your horses have a safe trip next weekend, Mark.
Well, and you know what? That's the most important thing. And as always, John, I look forward to seeing you. I always enjoy talking with you.
Well, thank you, sir. Take care.
We'll take our next question from Jay Privman with Daily Racing Form.
Hey, Mark. I had two questions for you. First off,
You figured out the calculations, right, Jay? Of a strong one. Depends how many we get.
2,300. Yeah. 2,369 to 1 if it's a 10-horse field. I knew you'd want to know. I did it for you.
Yeah, you're my cat. You're the one that does.
The first of the two questions I had was just if you could speak to the War of Will is going to run in all three legs of the Triple Crown. What does that say about his physical and or mental makeup that he's able to participate in all three of these races?
Well, I think it says a lot, especially I think the Derby was extremely hard on a lot of horses. I think the track surface, you know, with the rain and everything was tough on him. And then, I don't know, there seems to be fewer and fewer horses making all three races, but I think it speaks volumes for him. He comes to play. He's tough. He's got knocked around. He runs hard, but he's still there to play again.
And then the second question is sort of related. You know, as a trainer, you sort of alluded to this right after the Preakness in terms of participating in all three Triple Crowns. You said, you know, horses only get one chance to do it, but he was fine, you'd run it. But if you could sort of elaborate more on the importance from your perspective as a trainer of running in the Classics, even when there's not the Triple Crown on the line.
Well, Jay, you know, I've been following racing now, I'm 58 years old, for 50 years. It's been my life. My dad always said if it doesn't win, he doesn't know anything about it. It's very true. So you have to remember, when I started following racing, there was no Breeders' Cup. There was no Pegasus. There weren't a lot of these things now. There was the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and Belmont, the three greatest races of all time in North American history. And that hasn't changed. Maybe I'm wrong, but to me, there's only one Belmont. And if we have a shot and our horse is happy and he's healthy, we're going to do our very best to win it. That's what the Belmont means to me. So maybe I have more respect for the Belmont than others. I don't know. I know I've probably been doing it more longer than others. You know, there's a lot of guys out there who probably have been training and maybe only 20 years or 15 years. So maybe it's not as important to them. But Belmont's important to me. That's important to Gary Barber, who has followed horse racing his entire life as well.
Great. Thank you, Mark, very much.
Okay, Jay. See you.
There are no further questions.
Mark, you are now part of our two longest and most popular calls this year. So, again, congratulations, superstar.
Okay. Well, thank you. You know me. I like to talk, and I have opinions.
I know about it.
Okay.
I said, Mark, again, as always, thank you again for your time and your thoughts with everything. We'll look forward to seeing you at Belmont in a few days.
Everyone have a great day. See you soon. Bye.
And that will do it for that will do it for this NTRA National Media Teleconference. An audio file of this call will be up later today on NTRA.com, and a transcript will be there hopefully by tomorrow. Once again, thank you to our guests today, Dale Roman, Tom Amos, and Mark Cassie, and thank you to all of our participants for joining us today. And now back to our operator to wrap things up.
Thank you. And this concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.